This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to Boston Pizza City Place, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. The Jets and the Blue Jackets, 6 p.m. puck drop. Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and I believe Shane Knighty with the call on TSN 1290 tonight after us. Hustler and Lawless still to come later this afternoon, this evening, depending on your definition. Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Collision and Glass pregame power hour. Trying to get a hold of Tyson Nash from the Phoenix Coyotes TV analyst. Timmy's hard at work back at the station getting that underway. In the meantime, let's talk about Brent Sutter.
What about Richie's little chicken tortilla that just came over here?
Yeah, well, it's a good-looking salad. Richie, I'm sure, will be enjoying that in the commercial breaks upcoming.
What is that, kale there, Rich? Avocado?
Some avocado.
I want some pizza.
Stay away.
Yeah, well, only got to worry about another 90 minutes there, Ezzy, and then you can have all the pizza you want in the world.
Awesome.
Brent Sutter, after the World Juniors, sort of with some controversial statements that I don't think are really necessarily controversial, as they are honest and the opinion of a guy who is really hard to have a better reputation among junior hockey in Canada than Brent Sutter. Here's part of his quote. There's too much focus on winning and losing at such a young age, and not enough about the skill part of it. That's truly where it starts. At 16, 17, when they hit the Canadian Hockey League, there should already be a standard of skill already in place. I think there are times there is too much focus on winning and losing hockey games and X's and O's at a young age, and not enough on developing the skill sets. Your initial thoughts to that comment? Is he totally off base? Is this a guy who knows what he's talking about? Or is there the truth lies somewhere in between, as usually is the case?
Richie, he absolutely knows what he's talking about.
I agree.
Brent Sutter was a winner as a player. As a coach, he's won with the Red Deer Rebels. He's won two World Junior Golds. Is this a guy who is upset that Canada came back without a medal again this year? Yes, but I think there is some truth to it. Anytime a guy like Brent Sutter talks, and I know Don Cherry was a little upset about it, Richie.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, when Brent Sutter, you know, is talking about coaching, I think, you know, for a guy that's taken Canada to a couple gold medals at the World Juniors, you got to respect his opinion.
Well, yeah, it's that. It's the fact that he has a kid who's been through the system.
Yep.
Brandon Sutter. It's the fact that he coached at the NHL level. He's coached in the junior level with Red Deer. That's the team he owns. He's coached at the World Junior level. His brother has players that have come up through the system. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's won a Canada Cup. He's won World Juniors, as you mentioned. He's done a lot. And so, to me, I want to take what Brent Sutter has to say seriously. And I don't think it was bore a little bit out of emotion.
Yep.
But not entirely out of emotion. You know, you mentioned a couple weeks ago, or last week, as we coach, and I've coached on a couple occasions. And
yep.
I think you feel pressure at the NHL level to win. Claude Noel does. I think you feel pressure now in Canada to win at any level. Certainly not the same scale, but you feel pressure to win. And winning, and the results for winning seem to supersede anything else. And player development and skill development, while it helps in the big picture, many people don't see the big picture when they're in it. And it's a difficult thing to quantify.
Yep.
When you're coaching and you want to win games, do you do certain things that stunt the long-term development of players? I'm not sure if you necessarily do it intentionally, but you might do it. You know, for example, the teaching systems at such a young level, such things as the trap and things like that. There's a certain ability to teach game situations, but teaching systems and not having the players think the game, I think, stunts their growth down the line.
Hold that thought. We'll get back to this topic. I believe we have Tyson Nash on the line. Let's go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the Phoenix Coyotes TV color analyst for Fox Sports Arizona, Tyson Nash. Tyson, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Great to be a part of it.
Tyson, we got to start, before we get to the Coyotes and the NHL and their on-ice performance, we want to talk about Team Canada. Mike Smith, Coyotes goaltender, named to Team Canada's Olympic roster earlier this week. Was this a surprise pick for you at all, or did you think that Smith pretty much was a shoe-in for this team?
Well, I don't think anyone was really a shoo-in, maybe except, you know, the first two guys. I think Mike Smith, you know, everyone's hoping that he gets back to the way he played a couple years ago. And obviously, if that's the goaltender that I think Steve Yzerman wants to see, we haven't seen that consistently this year. He's still trying to kind of find his game a little bit. He's lacking some confidence. Had a rough game the other night again, but he's a great goaltender. We all know what he can do, what he did in the playoffs a couple years ago. You know, again, they just haven't seen it consistently enough this year, but very well-deserving. A goalie that plays the puck extremely well. The big guys, almost like having another defenseman out there. And, you know, he's a good guy in the locker room. And, you know, for a guy that's probably going to be the third goalie on that team, I think he's a perfect fit.
Tyson Keith Yandle, of course, was kind of part of that controversy, and obviously not of his own doing, as part of the USA team decision-making, and there was portions of the Scott Burnside, Kevin Allen articles where the brass was pretty critical of his game defensively. Have you spoken to Keith Yandle about that article, and how did he take it?
You know what? I haven't personally spoken to Keith Yandle. I guess just from my personal experience with Keith Yandle, I've known this kid since he was in the American Hockey League. We actually lived together, and the way that he's developed, and you know, just in general, I think that people don't recognize how good this guy can be offensively. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a game changer. How dynamic he can be. You know, the numbers that he can put up, how he can help the power play, and on the big ice there in Sochi, I just don't know how you can keep a guy like Keith Yandle off that roster. You know, considering that they don't have a lot of offense on their back end. And how Keith Yandle has really improved his defensive game. A couple years ago, yeah, he was growing. He was still young and making some critical errors at that time. But that has changed. You know, he's really developed into a real good young defenseman. He eats up a lot of minutes. And I think just personally from watching him game in and game out, what he means to the Phoenix Coyotes team, how you could leave a guy like that off the roster.
Tyson, the Coyotes are in town on Monday, and one of the forwards that the Jets are going to have to shut down is Radim Vrbata. He's tied for the team scoring lead with 31 points there with Mike Ribeiro. Vrbata is an unrestricted free agent coming up after this season. Do you have any update on where there would be contract talks with Vrbata? Do you think the Coyotes are going to look to sign Vrbata long term, or is he possibly a guy that they move before the trade deadline?
Well, you know, obviously Don Maloney is looking at everything, and I'm not privy to a lot of those conversations. The only thing I do know is that Radim wanted to put contract talks, on the back burner until the season was over. He didn't want any distractions this year. He just wanted to focus on having a great season and getting back to that 30-goal mark. I think he had 35 two or three years ago. So he's a great offensive weapon for this Coyotes team that doesn't have a lot of them. So I would think that Don Maloney would love to get Radim Vrbata signed. Obviously it always comes down to numbers and money. So I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. But this is a team that I don't think can afford to lose another offensive guy. I think if anything, they're trying to add more pieces offensively up front.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Tyson Nash. He is the Phoenix Coyotes TV analyst for Fox Sports Arizona. Tyson, before the season started, much to the, I'm sure, thanks of Phoenix Coyotes fans and NHL fans all together who are sick of talking about it, the Coyotes ownership situation was resolved. Have you noticed the subsequent change in mentality this season as a result of having this issue finally put behind them?
Well, you know, I think a lot of, the biggest thing for me, I think a lot of people talk about it and they try to relate. They just can't. They can't understand how a team has been able to function, you know, without ownership. How Don Maloney and Dave Tippett have done their job without an ownership group, without, really any sort of, budget. And now I'm so curious to see what a guy like Dave Tippett and Don Maloney can do, you know, now having, you know, being on the same playing surface as every other GM in the hockey league. So it's really interesting, and obviously things have settled down. You look at Shane Doan, the start that he had this season. I think you can just see. I know what it was like for me is like a 100-pound weight off our back, you know, knowing that we could have the team is going to be here long term. And for a guy like Shane Doan, who, you know, is giving his heart and soul to the community and to the hockey club, to have some things finally settled is just been huge.
Tyson, one of the players that, you know, we do our quarterly awards on the show, and we do our half-season awards, and the player that I had pegged for the Selke trophy is Martin Hansel, a guy who's a big body. You obviously know a lot about him. Big body. He's even developed his offensive game, but is tremendous defensively. Does he not get enough appreciation around maybe the inside the game people know, but maybe to the media and the fans from other, you know, cities?
Well, you're right. I mean, I think that just because we're out here in Phoenix, you know, we're not in the hockey hub there in Toronto, and I think if we were, you'd see guys like Oliver Ekman-Larsen and Keith Yandel and Martin Hansel getting a lot more attention. You know, in the hockey world. But anyone who, you know, follows this team definitely knows his importance. He's a big shutdown centerman. Those guys are hard to come by. And this year, he's really figured it out. You know, I think he's almost, you know, at the halfway point here, almost tied his career highs. I think 35 points was a career high, 16 goals. So he's pretty darn close to that. So he's a guy that, you know, has finally figured it out, as I mentioned, to use that 6'6" frame of his. And what it takes for him to score goals. He's not all that fast, but he's got the big reach, the big body, and he can get it done, you know, on the power play especially.
Now, Tyson, we've talked about this a lot on the show, how good that Phoenix Coyotes defense is. We talked about Keith Yandel, who we believe should have probably been on the Team U.S. team, and Oliver Ekman-Larsen, he's going to play for Sweden. We've got Derek Morris, a guy that actually hasn't been getting a lot of press here. He's from Winnipeg. Michael Stone, he's the brother of Mark Stone with that good World Junior tournament a few years back. He's an Ottawa Senators prospect. He's got 8 goals this year. How does he fit into the future of this team, and what do you think his ceiling is as an NHLer?
Well, you know, he's made huge strides, obviously. You look at the numbers, he's got a big, big shot from the point, and he uses it. It's that shoot-first mentality. He doesn't, make things difficult on himself. He just, as I mentioned, just keeps it real simple, and he gets pucks through to the front of the net. I think when you're a forward, that's what you want out of your defenseman. Just get it through so you can have the battle in front of the net. And he's also developing, you know, his overall game, how he defends. Obviously, Dave Tippett and his defense-first system is really helped that. His time in the American League as well, he's really turned into a real solid NHL defenseman. And I think we're just starting to scratch the surface on what he's capable of, no question.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're talking to Tyson Nash, the Phoenix Coyotes color analyst for Fox Sports Arizona. Tyson, you look at the standings, and the Coyotes are in the midst of a desperate chase for that last playoff spot in the wild card. You know, 2 points behind the Minnesota Wild right now for that final playoff spot. You know, less than 2 months to go before the NHL trade deadline. Assuming the Coyotes are right on the cusp of a playoff spot, or even in a playoff spot at the trade deadline, what area do you think Coyotes general manager Don Maloney is going to look to address?
Well, I think they're still struggling to find, as I mentioned, you know, with the talk of Radim Verbata, they're still trying to find a little bit more offense. Martin Hansel and Radim Verbata are a great dynamic duo. They just have never had a solid left winger ever since Ray Whitney left for the Dallas Stars for more money. They just haven't found a guy that can really, you know, help those two guys out. So right now it's Kropotkowski. He's done a real nice job in the interim, but I think long term they need to add a top 6 left winger, and hopefully that is something that Don. I think they're always looking to improve their hockey club, but that would be one spot I think that is pretty obvious.
Final question for you, Tyson. You know, the Calgary Flames have a GM opening, and Buffalo Sabres just filled theirs with Tim Murray. Brad Treliving is a guy who doesn't get a lot of press again, but the job he's done along with Don Maloney, as you've been talking about throughout the interview, do you think he gets a shot in Calgary, or at least his consideration? And do you think it's a matter of time before he actually leads his own NHL squad?
Yeah, it's just a matter of time. The job that he does, the name, the reputation that he's getting around the league, he's one of the best, hockey minds. Some of the players that he's picked off, you look at, the Portland Pirates and the teams that he has really helped, and the prospects in the Phoenix Coyotes organization is remarkable, you know, and that hasn't always been the case, but since Brad and Don have come in, they've just done a real good job, and, you know, we obviously hate to see him leave the Phoenix Coyotes, but he is definitely well-deserving of being in the conversation.
Tyson Nash covers the Phoenix Coyotes for Fox Sports Arizona. Tyson, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. We look forward to seeing you Monday in Winnipeg.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on this fine station. Big thank you to Tyson Nash, Phoenix Coyotes TV analyst, for having just joined us. In case you missed any of it, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, before we started talking to Tyson, we were discussing Brent Sutter and his comments regarding, the development of Canadian junior players, the development of sort of youth hockey in Canada. The question I have is, how does Canada fix this? You know, we hear all this talk about systems and systems. I mean, when you guys, I think, told the anecdote, I think it was either on midweek or it was on last Saturday's show, when you guys coached your youth team a couple years ago, you had parents wanting you to teach the trap or something. Is it too ingrained in Canadian hockey culture now to just let kids be kids? Or is it just, can they sort of step back and just let kids go out and just have fun as opposed to relying on a system and on being so structured in X's and O's?
Well, there's something to Brent Sutter's comments. And then there's also the overreaction component. Canada's won a medal up until the last 2 years, 14 years in a row. They're defending Olympic champions. Canada's the best hockey country in the world, in my opinion. Have other countries caught up? Absolutely. Sweden's an excellent hockey country. The Americans have won the World Junior dating back 2 years ago. Is there a huge problem with Canadian hockey? I don't think there is, but is there room to change maybe the mentality and the coaching styles of coaches at the younger level? We're talking 10 to 14-year-olds? Absolutely. I think you probably do want to have more of an emphasis on skating, skill development, shots, stick handling, things of that nature, as opposed to maybe how to play a system well and how to... See, when Brent Sutter talks about... When Brent Sutter talks about there's too much emphasis on winning, obviously a Canadian team wants to win at any tournament. If it's the Spengler Cup, World Under 17 Hockey Challenge, doesn't matter. You always want to win. I think what he's saying is that it might be at the expense of we're not developing maybe as a whole as many skilled players as other countries. And again, getting back to systems, I mean, I think systems are important, but the most important thing in hockey is skating and being able to read plays and knowing how to use your body and defend yourself, things of that nature. So there's something to this, but again, Brent Sutter, isn't used to losing at the World Juniors, so I think he's also frustrated, and I think it's been taken a little bit out of context. But absolutely, I don't think a 10-year-old who's just really learning how to skate properly should be learning how to, employ the left wing lock.
I think systems are one factor. If you read Wayne Gretzky's book I just finished, and I don't think it's just a Canadian issue. Maybe it's a U.S. issue, too. He talks about seeing the kids these days and the amazing ability of them to skate and look great, and then the puck gets thrown on the ice, and they don't know what the heck's going on. So it's not just systems. I think it's, what you're also getting is a huge divide, right, in Canada now, when you're getting specialized everything. So kids are playing 12 months a year. They're playing hockey, which they ought not to.
Which is ridiculous.
As far as I'm concerned. So what happens is they become, like, robots in terms of the way they play. That's one of the things I've noticed. If you watch younger kids play, they're a lot more methodical. And you're going to say, oh, they're better, they have this. Well, yeah, okay, so the equipment's better, the teachings are, all that stuff. I don't buy that they're any better than the actual players were before. They seem to have an inability or a limited ability to see the game and react to it as it comes, and they need to... They play with their blinders on a lot of the times and don't use their teammates as much, and... I agree with Gretzky. You throw the puck out there, and a lot of them are, you see it without a puck, you think, oh, these guys look great. And with a puck and with teammates in the structure of a game, or in the flow of a game, I shouldn't say structure, in the flow of a game, they get lost. And I think that's a lot of that is due to the fact that ice time in the city rinks costs a fortune. And for whatever reason, I don't think kids get out and play, use the outdoor rinks as much as we used to. I certainly don't. They're hardly ever foaming.
This year it's because it's so cold.
Yeah, but in any event, they don't use the rinks, and that's the only free ice you're going to get.
Yep.
You know how much ice is? Rented it on my birthday, as you guys know. The ice was Saturday afternoon slot in a downtown in a middle of the town rink.
Yeah.
Was $240 for an hour. It's crazy. And maybe that's what the community clubs need to stay afloat. So be it. But think about that. We're all adults. You know, most of us are able to pay for something like that. But for kids, for families, when there's limited funds, that's difficult. And then when you're putting out that money, and you're choosing where to allot your funds, and if you're going to go with hockey, a lot of people want to go all in on it, and they do it all year round. And I think the kids also don't get a break from it. Don't. And I've said this on the show before, I think, when you play basketball or baseball or football or any of it...
Gretzky played baseball.
Well, yeah, but most of the guys play, look at Russell Wilson with the Texas Rangers draft, just when they want his attitude, but he played baseball. A lot of the guys you see in the U.S., there's three sports stars.
Tom Glavine.
Dave Winfield.
Named to the Baseball Hall of Fame, was a hockey draft pick.
But you see the game, you see that game, and you can take elements of that game and bring it to hockey. But if you're only playing hockey all year round... There's issues with that as well. So this is not something that can be fixed in a day, in a week, even a year. And I don't know how it gets fixed, though. I mean, you have to have a collective that has the same goals. And I'm not so sure they do. You remember the article of the special that Randy Turner did in the Free Press,
yep,
about the cost of hockey?
Sure.
No, but they don't all have the same goals. Why? Because some people want their kids to play in the NHL and they'll pay any amount of money. And many guys can't afford that. And that's another issue. There's so many. I mean, we could do a whole show about this topic.
But Richie, getting back to kind of, the grassroots level and minor hockey and things of that nature, is there a problem with Canadian hockey? 9 of the 10 top scorers in the NHL are Canadians. So the answer to that quickly is no.
But, Ezzy, I think that issue is there's always going to be the best players. My concern is the guys who don't have a chance stop playing. That's
right.
My concern.
Right. So, when we're talking about, most of the kids that aren't going to go to the NHL and all that, or just how we're developing, because we're talking about the highest level of junior hockey here, right? We're talking about winning gold, the program of excellence, which started mm-hmm. in 1982 and all that. And, hockey, to a certain degree, is not, you mentioned, hockey and how players look robotic to you. And hockey isn't a robotic.
More robotic, yeah.
It's more robotic. It's not a robotic game. And, I think there, when you're looking at how hockey is coached, and, getting back to that article that was done by Randy Turner, kids should not be playing hockey that much. You just shouldn't be. You should be playing other sports. I think we'd realize that you should be playing baseball. You should be playing basketball. Do yoga. Do martial arts.
But it's a supply and demand thing. If there's parents who want their kids to do that, and there's people who can offer that service and make money for it, you're not going to see it evaporate.
I just think that when you're talking about a kid that's playing hockey that much, I think it might be overkill, considering that your chances of making the NHL are pretty minimal.
Let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Frank Provenzano. He's an ESPN.com writer. He's the former assistant general manager of the Dallas Stars. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast,
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Frank Provenzano from ESPN.com. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and how are you?
Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing very well, thank you.
It's a beautiful day down here in Dallas.
That's good. It's much more mild in Winnipeg than it was previously, so we're happy about that, certainly.
You survived the polar vortex?
Yeah, we survived the polar vortex. We call it winter, typically, though. That's the only problem. Frank, we want to start with the USA Hockey selection process and the announcement of Team USA that was made at the Winter Classic about a week ago or so now, 10 days or so. You know, the comments made by the team's brass, obviously, was the big story after the announcement. I mean, we heard so much hand-wringing about what Brian Burke said or what he didn't say. Would it be fair to say that such discourse and such commentary is common in the everyday meetings of an NHL team?
Yeah, you know, I thought that was an excellent piece of, a really excellent read that Scott Burnside wrote. And it was amazing he had that access. And as someone who, you know, I've never sat in on an Olympic selection committee, but the reality is, and I almost think this was the bigger story, or a story that nobody talked about. Everyone focused on Brian Burke's actual quotes. But you know, the reality is, when you're sitting in those war rooms and you're putting lineups on a board and trying to figure out who goes where, you're in there for hours, and not, you know, 95% of the things that get talked about in, say, an NHL team never actually happen. So that is how, you know, management, maybe not as colorfully as Brian, you know, was quoted as saying, but that is the process that goes on when you're trying to figure out, you know, a player to add versus a player to not add. And I thought the more interesting thing was that nobody talked about is that's how NHL teams are selected.
Frank, when Team Canada made that roster announcement on Tuesday, Steve Yzerman obviously had to have that difficult conversation with Marty St. Louis that we learned that he called Marty St. Louis the Monday night before the announcement. Do you think that the decision of Team Canada not to include Marty St. Louis on the Olympic roster, do you think that's going to affect the relationship between Yzerman and St. Louis going forward?
I think if Steve Yzerman was the GM of even the American team or you know, Sweden or someone like that, it may have affected more than him being the GM of Team Canada, because I think, you know, any player would understand that was a very difficult decision and that this is a very, very, very difficult team to be a member of, because the caliber of players that they had to select from and the players that aren't on the team. So it could. I doubt it will. My guess is that Steve Yzerman, who, you know, had such a distinguished career and was such a classy player, knows how to speak that language to that type of player, and in that phone call was probably just pretty honest with his player and just said, you know, look, I'm guessing, but you're not on the team, but here's how I think of you as a player and a person. So I doubt it will happen because of the types of people that both that player and that GM are. But, it was a tough one for sure.
Frank, you know, you obviously being assistant general manager before in the National Hockey League and working most recently in Dallas, have you ever had to have a conversation with the player? Obviously not an Olympic conversation, you mentioned you hadn't partaken in that, but a conversation with the player with regards to a demotion or a trade. And how do you go about preparing for that?
In my sort of career, when I had to have those types of conversations, I generally tried to keep them short. Most of my conversations were, you're going down to the minors. And so once the player hears you're going down to the minors, then they really don't hear anything else anyway, other than, oh my, you know, I'm going down to the minors. And they're invariably disappointed. And so I would just keep it short and sweet. You're going down, go see, you know, the director of team services to get your travel information. The equipment guy has your bag ready, blah, blah, blah. I would be very sort of quick and direct. In the few instances where I had to inform a player that he was traded, I tried to do the same. You thank the player for his contribution. You tell them that they're traded. And the first question almost always that you get is, who am I traded for? They always want to know, kind of gauge their own market value.
That's interesting.
And then, now, especially now, with the advent of social media, when it comes to trade, the trade is almost always, or often out there before you actually get a hold of the player.
How does that happen, by the way, Frank? Just, you know, in terms of logistics, like how does it get out to the media before the player is even told? Is that the fact that the call is made to the NHL and some of the NHL will leak it out? Is that how it works?
I don't think that the NHL leaks it out. In fact, I doubt the NHL leaks it out, but there's usually a lot of people. When you're going to make a trade, you've usually been working on it for a few days. A lot of these trades now involve no trade clauses or some sort of restriction on movement. And so, you know, a lot of times you have to have the agent sign off on it, or you're asking scouts with different teams and getting opinions. And quite frankly, the media is very good at sort of in around the time the players are traded, you know, especially around the trade deadline, like trades just get out. And the media is very good at sort of triangulating information. And my guess is that, you know, people sort of trade in the currency of information around that time of year. So they're not necessarily going to say what they're doing, but they're saying, you know, I hear such and such team is looking for so-and-so type thing.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Frank Provenzano. Frank is the former assistant general manager of the Dallas Stars. He's now an ESPN.com writer, ESPN insider. His latest article was debating Team Canada's roster decisions for the 2014 Sochi Olympics. You can get that on ESPN.com behind the paywall, unfortunately, but it's well worth it, I assure you of that. Frank, going back to the Olympics for a second, you were with the Stars organization throughout the critical development years for Jamie Benn. We know Jamie Benn obviously named to Canada's Olympic team. Can you talk about how he came along after being such a late round draft pick?
Yeah, when in Jamie's draft year, you know, I think he was playing. In the BC Junior League on Vancouver Island for Victoria, if my memory serves correct. And, you know, he had sort of grown a lot and was a little bit of a gangly skater because, quite frankly, if we were so smart, we wouldn't have let him hang around to the fifth round either. But we had a scout based in British Columbia who had gone out and seen him a few times, and we drafted him. And then he just sort of kind of overshot the development curve, and in his first year of pro, he made our team at a training camp and really never looked back. The only time he played in the minors was we sent him to the American League for their playoff run. They actually went all the way to the finals that year, more to get him experience in the playoffs than anything else. He had been with us in the NHL that whole year. And it's interesting, this year he was named the captain, and, you know, I'm based in Dallas, obviously. I still see a lot of the games. He's, in addition to his natural skill set now, he's really taken the leadership role very serious. And you know, is maturing into a more into the hockey player I think that we all thought he could be when he first arrived here. I think he's an excellent addition to Team Canada because he's got a great combination of skill, size, and a little, you know, and physicality, which is something that with all those great players, that maybe is an area that they don't have as much an abundance of because they have so much skill. So I'm a big Jamie Benn fan. Biased, I guess.
Yeah, we are as well.
Yeah, we all thought he should be on the team, and he deserves to be on there. Frank, a lot of talk this week in Winnipeg was about the Winnipeg Jets system, and Dejan Kovacevic, Pittsburgh Penguins writer, came out with an article and quoted some players and said that they didn't even think the Winnipeg Jets had a system or it wasn't a very good system. Do you think that all of this talk about systems in the NHL, and specifically the Winnipeg Jets, is overblown?
I mean, I do. I always thought the best system was having really good players.
Yeah, exactly.
you know, you tend to focus more on systems when maybe you don't have the personnel that some of the elite teams do, which, not to say that everybody needs a system and some structure to their play. I think their system, you know, has to sort of match their personnel. And I think when you're not doing well on the ice, then, you know, that's where you start picking holes. Oh, we don't know our system. We don't know where we're supposed to do, where we're supposed to be. They don't have a system. When the reality is, everyone has a system, and quite frankly, most of them are very similar.
Right.
And it just comes down to execution.
Yeah.
You know, and we talk about systems a lot, and really what it comes down to most often is goaltending and special teams.
Yeah, it's amazing the catchphrases that garner the most attention. You know, Frank, one thing that doesn't garner a ton of attention, you hear about a prospect being drafted, and people will monitor him, but we don't hear a lot about player, you know, we hear the term, like the catchphrase, player development, but what does that really mean from an organizational perspective?
Well, I think player development, you know, our sport is unlike some of the other major sports in that we draft players at 18 years old, and for the most part, outside of the kind of the outliers, they're the elite drafted kids, they're not ready to play in the National Hockey League. And so we don't have the NCAA as our primary feeder system where they come into, say, the NFL and the NBA and they're game ready. And so, you know, you need to provide them with a place to play, and primarily that's the American Hockey League. And I think development is really, I always looked at it like it's a place where you can afford for your players to fail. Because you can't afford for them to fail at the NHL level, generally speaking. And so you're providing them with a game environment where you can live with their mistakes because you can live with the losses more than you can at the NHL level.
This is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Frank Provenzano. He is an ESPN.com insider, the former assistant general manager of the Dallas Stars. Frank, you know, in terms of trades this year in the NHL, it's been quieter than just about any other year. Largely, I think a lot of teams would attribute that to the salary cap and teams being so tight up against the salary cap. Really, the only significant trade was the trade that saw Thomas Vanek go to Long Island, Matt Molson go back to Buffalo. Do you think we'll see any significant trade action before the Olympic break?
I don't think that you'll see much more than you've seen now. And the minute I say that, we'll have four trades.
Three trades since the interview started.
I don't think you'll see it prior to the Olympic break because I think that'll be a time where teams will really focus on, you know, from here to the Olympic break on where they actually sit relative to a realistic playoff spot. I mean, now in the East, you know, there's really only arguably three teams that you could say it's going to be pretty tough for them to grab a playoff spot. I think Columbus is 4 points out of a wild card spot. So I think from here on out to the Olympics, you'll see teams really evaluating realistically where they are, and then having a hard look at during that break. Okay, you know, what do we want to do going into the sort of condensed period to the trade deadline? And I think you'll see some movement this year at the trade deadline. Every year you do.
Frank, Dustin Byfuglien, the Jets play the Blue Jackets tonight. He's going to line up on the first line on right wing. And obviously that's been the talk of the town in Winnipeg. As far as league-wide in the NHL, what's the perception of Dustin Byfuglien? He's going to play forward, but do teams look at Dustin Byfuglien like a guy that they can exploit on defense? Is this a good move in your opinion?
I think I've always been a fan of Big Buff.
Yeah.
And I think he can be a bit of a lightning rod there maybe, and I haven't seen Winnipeg play in the last couple weeks. And I think they've lost four in a row here.
Mm-hmm.
I think he can be a bit of a lightning rod because of the kind of game he plays, but he's a player that, you know, he's a risk-return player. And some nights, you know, when he's out on the ice, there's a good chance it's going to be in one of the two nets. And some nights, the game he plays does have maybe a little more risk to it in the defensive zone than you'd like, but he can also produce at the offensive zone. I think, you know, it's interesting when you move him to the wing, he can still capitalize on sort of the offensive elements of his game, but you're taking him out of that sort of high percentage defensive coverage area that maybe people think he's deficient at. But, you know, I think in Winnipeg, it'd be hard to pin it on one guy.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Final question for you, Frank. 24/7 just wrapped up, and I think a lot of the listeners have probably seen some episodes, and maybe all four, maybe not, but at least a portion of them. How accurate? I mean, obviously that is edited a bit by whether it be the teams or the NHL. How accurate is? I mean, we know it's a reality show, but it is edited. So how much of that is what, like, the fans would see, or is how much of that just generic stuff that they're throwing out there and is regular locker room stuff, and how much of it is the proprietary information is taken out?
It's pretty accurate. I mean, that's a pretty good look at sort of the everyday, drumbeat of an NHL season. I think in terms of editing, I think what you're starting to see is more self-editing going on by the teams. I think, as sort of 24/7 has gone on, and part of the more colorful, this, you could argue that this maybe was the most boring 24/7 of all of them in terms of the content. And I think some of that is a bit of self-editing going on by the players and the coaches, et cetera, because some of the more interesting and colorful events of the past 24/7s maybe weren't as good for the, Briz Galoff's quotes or Bruce Boudreau's walking around in his Santa Claus underwear. It wasn't as good for those guys. And so people may be a little more conscious of the camera and what it produces now on an individual level.
Yeah, Frank, I think we'd all agree with that. I think there should have been more Phil Kessel and Tyler Bozak having house parties and less Dion Phaneuf's closet.
Frank Provenzano is an ESPN.com insider. He's the former assistant general manager of the Dallas Stars, and he is a guest on this program the second Saturday of each and every month. Frank, until the middle of February, have yourself a good one.
You too, guys, and stay warm.
We'll try our best. Stay warm down in Dallas as well. Thanks very much.
All right, see ya.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Big thank you to Frank Provenzano for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of that, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN 1290, and on that fine website, IllegalCurve.com. Dave Minuk from IllegalCurve.com joining us here at Boston Pizza City Place. It is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. And this segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Good news for everybody that missed out on purchasing Charlie Murphy tickets. New shows have just been added. The tickets go on sale this coming Monday at 1 p.m. So if you missed out on buying Charlie Murphy tickets, Monday, you get another chance to do that.
They shouldn't even bother putting them up. I'm going to buy all of them.
You're buying every... Ezzy's on board for
every
all of them.
Every single ticket.
He's like Ralph Wilson in Buffalo.
Throwing a big party.
There's going to be a blackout. He buys all the tickets.
He just buys all the tickets.
Let's have a Charlie Murphy party. Big party.
I'm not sure that Rumors is willing to get paid in crackers, though. That's
true,
thing.
Yeah.
I'm not
what
sure
about IOUs?
No, IOUs. Your credit's not good there, Ezzy. Let me tell you, that's for sure. Toronto Maple Leafs. Struggling as of late. They lost again last night to the Washington Capitals. They are, have fallen out of a playoff spot. They've lost four games in a row. And the attention isn't being focused so much on the players themselves, but rather it's being focused on the man behind the bench, a man familiar to hockey fans in this fair city. Randy Carlyle getting a lot of grief for the job he's doing as a head coach. This is James Myrtle writing in the Globe and Mail on Friday morning. And this is bold language from a guy like that. If it wasn't before now, it's clear the Toronto Maple Leafs have a problem behind the bench. To me, Randy Carlyle is not at the top of my list of problems afflicting the Toronto Maple Leafs. The problem might be the roster construction and the level of talent on that team more than the coaching.
And the way the players are playing. We always love to place blame, but the players have to eat some of that blame as well. I agree with you on the roster construction, and I do believe that Randy Carlyle could be doing a better job right now, too. Again, I think a lot of people a lot of people are there to blame. I mean, Michael Tracos wrote a really good article in the National Post kind of outlining the issues, and I agree. You know, you watch a team, the fourth line's not used that much, or why don't they have other players there? Okay. Third line center, choices they've made in that respect. Obviously, Dave Bolin's been a piece that they've missed. Why they're playing certain defensemen and not others, and the goalie thing less so, but everybody has the answers. You know, everybody knows that roster better than Randy Carlyle, allegedly. The thing about Randy Carlyle here is, you know, especially with the 24/7, I kind of feel like this is similar to the Bruce Boudreaux thing. They see certain things on TV, fans and observers, and they say, okay, now we know what he's like, so we can evaluate him at a greater level. And I think we all fall victim to that in some ways. But Randy Carlyle didn't forget how to coach, you know, 2 days ago. And let's just look about Randy Carlyle. I hired him at the end of, not last season, but the season prior. He got an idea of the roster. Last year he coached a team everybody said was based on luck, and, you know, that's fine. They played 48 games, and they made it to game 7 of the first round of the playoffs, overtime against a team that eventually went to the Stanley Cup final and lost to the Chicago Blackhawks. Blew a 4-1 game down the stretch there. Well, whose fault is that? So, I mean, in basically a season and a half, you're saying, all right, the problem is Randy Carlyle, and he's the problem, and now everybody's, you know, Dave Nonis has to come out, give him a vote of confidence and all that stuff. I will say one thing before Ezzy gets it, because I know Mike Harrington's coming up. If Randy Carlyle is let go by the Leafs, I would not want to be Claude Noel.
Yes,
I agree with
and,
you there.
And, you know, on this whole topic, and, you know, you mentioned 24/7, Richie, and the Leafs have been struggling. And I'm just glad that the focus, I don't think it's all falls on Randy Carlyle. I'm just glad that we're not talking about advanced stats and how all these guys were right, and now it's regressing to the mean. I mean,
I assure you, they're talking about it.
Oh, yeah, they're
right.
Definitely taking credit for it, all the you know, the spreadsheet crunchers out there. But, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs, Richie, again
Ezzy, let me get in there real quickly. On that point, it's like Randy Carlyle doesn't know where the problems in the roster are.
The problem of this team is they can't move the puck out of their zone. And Mark Fraser is a guy that's got come into the lineup there. They've brought a guy like Tim Gleason in. Tim Gleason is a guy where he can't come in there and change everything. You've got fundamental problems with the way this group of defensemen move the puck out of the zone. Cody Franzen had a great year last year. He's struggling this year. Even a guy like Carl Gunnarsson has struggled this year. You go up and down the roster, Paul Ranger has struggled this year. It's so bad that the Leafs moved John Michael Lyles to Carolina, and now he actually doesn't look bad on Carolina. He's getting all of this heat. He couldn't even get into the lineup. This team needs a significant move on defense, not getting Tim Gleason. All due respect to Tim Gleason. He's a guy that, you know, at this point in his career, he's a veteran guy. He can drop the gloves, but he's a physical guy that's going to be a fifth or sixth defenseman. This group needs a shakeup. Randy Carlyle is an excellent coach. He's won the Stanley Cup with the Ducks. And as Richie mentioned, and guys, this is only a year from a team that almost went to the second round.
It's just Toronto, and everybody seems to know how to do better. He's doing some things that I disagree with, but it doesn't mean that you need to get rid of the guy. I mean, you're going to disagree with many things a coach does. And, you know, think about, I want to get quickly to the core players. Joffrey Lupo, Phil Kessel, James Van Riemsdyk, and Dion Phaneuf. Those are the four guys they're paying bundles of money to.
Yep.
They're core guys that are probably all overpaid, or at least a portion of them overpaid. Are those Randy? My question is, are those Randy Carlyle type guys? And
didn't acquire any of them under his watch.
Well, Van Riemsdyk, was he not under his watch?
Sorry, Van Riemsdyk may have been,
but the idea is, Drew, you know, they're more like a guy like a Phil Kessel's is a finesse guy. Mm-hmm. You know, James Van Riemsdyk plays more finesse than physical, although he can certainly be physical. And Joffrey Lupo's guy that had a falling out with Carlyle in Anaheim, and now they seem to have mended fences, which has not happened with Jake Gardiner, who's had issues. And then you look at Dion Phaneuf, who, you know, for all these faults of these players, I think they have a lot of strengths, but they also have faults. They've been locked in by the general manager, who needs to have some responsibility, and they've received, you know, $7-8 million. So you've signed these guys because the Kessel arguments were, and then Phaneuf arguments were like, yeah, you weren't going to get anything better on the free agent market. Is it ever that good when you lock up 14, 15, 16 million bucks in two guys and say, well, we weren't sure what we were going to get on the market, so we might as well sign them?
It's not an overwhelming vote of confidence.
So there are issues here. So people wanted, the easiest thing to do, like it is in Winnipeg, is just to say, you know, get rid of Claude Noel. But there are bigger issues.
I just want to touch on something. Richie's right. I don't think there is enough grit in this lineup. That's why they went out and they got Dave Bolin and David Clarkson, Richie. But the problem with that is, Clarkson gets suspended, in and out of the lineup. Bolin's only played 15 games this year. So is that Randy Carlyle's fault? No. Right now, you've had so much instability in that lineup with guys coming in and out, and Bozak was out, and then he's come back. I think Bozak has been fine. Van Riemsdyk and Kessel, that's your number one line, but can they on a consistent basis beat teams when there's only one line going?
And
right now,
regressed.
You don't have a lot of secondary scoring. You mentioned Kadri. He isn't playing at the same level. You miss Clark MacArthur. There's all these things. You miss guys in the lineup, and sure, is Randy Carlyle partly responsible for that? But I don't think that by any means it's anywhere close to getting rid of Randy Carlyle. That's my opinion, because I think he's a great coach.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News talking about the Sabres and their new general manager, Tim Murray. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show a very good friend of the program, and somebody, if I understand correctly, is now looking to purchase a home in Winnipeg after his latest travel ordeal. Mike Harrington. Mike, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us. You were probably expecting a bit of a quieter afternoon, and then Mikhail Grigorenko went and made some news for you.
What do you say about kids, right? I mean, he's 19 years old, but yeah, the nutshell of the whole situation is the Sabres sent Grigorenko back to junior in Quebec, and Ted Nolan told us today it's the best for him. He even used the words non-negotiable when he told us that Grigorenko was upset, and now it's come out that Grigorenko is refusing to report. His agent, Jay Grossman, has confirmed to me he refused to report, did not answer my inquiries about what's next. So we don't really know what's next. The Quebec Ramparts are having a press conference in an hour, apparently, to discuss the situation. The Sabres are en route to Washington for their game tomorrow, and a 19-year-old who was the number one pick last year is really in limbo now, and no one knows what's next.
Well, straight from the fire to the frying pan for new Sabres general manager Tim Murray. He's obviously going to have to deal with this, and right away, I guess it'll be a good test of his acumen, because we know his acumen is strong, but I guess stubborn he wants to be with regard to a move. But were you surprised with the hire of Tim Murray as the Sabres' new general manager?
No, I think I think there's certainly a question of how is he going to be in terms of making moves at the NHL level, but he has a tremendous reputation in scouting and development. And this is a total rebuild. That's what they're looking for. And he learned a lot under Brian Murray in Ottawa, and I think most people here, think it seems like a pretty good choice, but no one really knows until you get down a couple of years to see how it pans out.
Mike, you mentioned scouting and development, talent evaluation. We've heard a lot about that as far as Tim Murray goes. How does he appear different than as far as maybe the style or resume of Darcy Regier?
He's not going to be passive. He'll be aggressive, and I think the one thing Darcy Regier did was he fell in love with his draft picks and basically would never move them. I think if Tim Murray sees a deal out there that would include a young player in a draft pick, he's going to do that. And the Sabres simply never jumped at opportunity when it came up to them, and I think that was a major failure of Darcy Regier.
Yeah, Mike, Craig Patrick has been brought in as well to kind of be part of the management team. What's his role going to be specifically?
Well, they're calling him a special assistant. I think he's another set of eyes. You have Pat LaFontaine, the president of hockey, who's never been a front office executive for a team before. You have Tim Murray, who has a lot of experience in the NHL, has never been a general manager before. So Craig Patrick is simply going to be another set of eyes, an advisor. They're going to be able to bounce things off of. Understand, guys, this used to be a bit of a fiefdom here. Darcy Regier didn't really have any other sets of eyes, and certainly the last few years many people thought he should have, and the Sabres are now building this thing the right way. There are lots of people who look at things in most organizations. It hasn't been done that way here. It's going to be now.
Is there a concern, I think you're right about that, Mike, in terms of having more eyes, but is there a concern at all as to who will be making that final decision?
No. We asked Pat LaFontaine that the other day, and he said Tim Murray is the general manager, and it sounds like Tim Murray will be making trades and making roster decisions. I mean, but that remains to be seen. I mean, the coaching situation, most people think that Pat LaFontaine was telling people you have to really seriously consider Ted Nolan. I would certainly keep Ted Nolan, but most GMs would want to hire their own guy, but Tim Murray seems open to Ted Nolan. So we're going to have to see how that kind of stuff plays out.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News discussing the Sabres hiring of Tim Murray as their new general manager. Mike, who do you think the final three candidates for this job were?
Well, we think it was Tim Murray and Jim Benning of Boston and perhaps Michael Cuda of the LA Kings. Benning, by all accounts, Bruins weren't going to let go, and that was one of the issues there. Peter Chiarelli is heavily involved with Team Canada, and Benning certainly is essentially running the show with the Bruins right now, and it just seemed like they weren't going to let him go. I really think Benning, who had a long relationship with the Sabres and worked here in the 90s, might have been their number one choice, but I just think the Sabres felt they had to get someone in the house here to start working on some of these issues and had to move on.
Mike, you mentioned some of the other candidates that were interviewing, Jim Benning and other individuals. As far as the timeline from when Pat LaFontaine was hired as president of hockey operations, why do you think this whole process took this long?
Well, I don't think they were in any hurry. I think LaFontaine wanted to do a bunch of interviews, and he got more candidates than he expected. And I think he used some of the interviews as a sort of fact-finding mission and asked about his organization, asked generically how an organization should be run, and I think he found the process very interesting. And, you know, he wasn't under the gun to hire a GM right away. And now as we get closer to the Olympic break, which is almost going to be a fake trade deadline before the Olympics start here, I think he felt compelled to get a guy in here. And I think he just was doing a lot of due diligence because this is a hire that's going to impact this franchise for a long time going forward.
Ryan Miller, of course, you know, Mike, you wrote about in the Buffalo News, the Ted Nolan and Ryan Miller are those two big decisions. You kind of touched on Nolan, and Tim Murray's kind of alluded to possibly removing the interim tag, although it doesn't appear anything's official yet. What happens, do you think, with Ryan Miller?
I don't know. You know, we talked to Ryan Miller today at practice, and he said he hasn't talked to Tim Murray yet, and he's happy LaFontaine wants to keep him, but he wants to, you know, see. I think what's going to happen is, the Sabres are going to say to Ryan Miller, here's your contract extension. Do you want it or not? And if Miller says no, the Sabres say thank you very much and move him. If Miller says yes, everybody gets down to five. And if Miller says I'm not sure, the Sabres are going to say, well, okay, but you better make a decision quick. And I think that would mean they would move him by the deadline. I mean, it's still a question who's going to need a goalie, what the goalie market is. But Ryan Miller needs to say yes to the Sabres. He's going to stay. If there's any doubt, he's going to trade it.
Mike, I think you'd agree the big upside of this Buffalo Sabres team are some of the draft picks that they've made recently. We talked about Grigorenko. We don't really know what the immediate future of Grigorenko is with the Buffalo Sabres. But Rasmus Ristolainen had a really good World Junior tournament. Nikita Zadorov, plus they've got some picks coming up in the 2014 draft. What direction do you think Tim Murray's going to take as far as the prospect pool goes?
Well, they're going to build from the draft, and that's what you have to build. But you cannot do what the Sabres tried to do this year and have four teenagers in the lineup. That was patently ridiculous, too, and almost bordered on a tank job. You have to mix in some NHL veterans, and their problem here is they have too many third and fourth line guys. They have to go out and get some talent, some guys who can put the puck in the net. So they're going to make some deals with some of this big cachet of draft picks they have. And they're going to make some deals to get some NHL players in here before next season. I'm pretty convinced of it.
Mike Harrington covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News, Mike. And if you thought that traveling back and forth to Winnipeg was difficult, just imagine if you have to go to Russia to cover Mikhail Grigorenko in the KHL.
Well, you know what? After the ordeal to get to and from Winnipeg, a place that I always find fun to attend, it was a long trip a couple weeks ago, and Russia would probably be faster than the 28 hours when you get to Winnipeg.
And you'll be glad to know we fixed the ruts in the streets, so it's no longer like driving on Mars anymore.
It's not like off-road vehicle, right? Okay, that's good to hear.
Mike, thanks very much for joining us. We'll let you get back on the Grigorenko beat.
All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Take care, Mike. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The public will be glad to know that Ezzie has...
Well, they heard it right there.
Well, they heard it, exactly. Ezzie got his pierogi pizza. We're live here at Boston Pizza City Place. So Ezzie's never been quite as happy as to see a dollop of sour cream on top of a pizza, let me tell you.
The pierogi pizza here is one of the best things ever anywhere. It's a combination of a classic Winnipeg Ukrainian food and then just traditional pizza. I'm
glad you explained for the public what a pierogi pizza entails.
It's unbelievable.
Well, we could hear what it tastes like. We took that massive bite as we came back from break.
I've never seen him that happy in my life.
By the way, great job by Chris today.
Yeah, Chris on site here, producing on site, and Timmy back at the studio.
And
doing
I was
going
to say, Timmy, of course, prove it all night. Great choice by Timmy to round the show out here.
There you go. You got your Bruce, so you're happy.
Oh, Timmy always does a great job.
Why don't we finish the show? It's one final
and
segment.
And Remus came down. Remus is turning 27 tomorrow.
Yeah, it's Remus's birthday, so tonight you can head out and
big
celebrate
birthday for Remus's
birthday.
He came down. He was doing good work. So, yeah, everybody's in a jolly mood. The Jets are primed to win 5-2 today.
Everybody's bringing their A game tonight here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to one final segment. You know it. You love it. It's called Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Each and every time, gentlemen, a Team Canada is selected, be it an Olympic team, a World Cup of Hockey team, or an old Canada Cup team, someone...
I thought you were going to say an old-timers team.
Someone is always snubbed. There's always one player that's considered a snub.
Yep.
In your opinion, what was the biggest snub ever inflicted by Team Canada?
I'm going to reverse it and call out Patrick Waugh and Ray Bourque for snubbing the 96 World Cup team. There you go.
See what Richie just did
there? That's fine.
Flipped the script.
I'm willing to have the script flipped.
Flipped it entirely. You don't know what just happened. Your mind was just blown, Drew. So
he had pizza, now he's hyper.
Okay, yeah,
that's
you know
clearly
what?
What's happened.
I think Marty St. Louis is a big snub, but I'm going to go with Marc Messier in 1998, one of the greatest natural goal scorers of all time. You know, he's left off the team, and they can't beat the Czech Republic. They can't even get to the gold medal game. It's got to be Marc Messier, 1998.
Is Hustler heckling us? Is that what just happened?
I think that's what happened.
Okay.
What about Yzerman in 87?
Wow, 91 also.
Are you sure he was on the 91 team?
Well,
I saw that. I wasn't sure that's accurate, by the way.
Really?
I thought he was cut from the 84 and
well,
87
Well, one that we should mention, Ian Mendez of 1200 in Ottawa, he mentioned Bobby Hull in 1972.
Oh, was yeah,
91.
Because he was in the WHA at that point.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
Yeah, that was always a big one as well.
Snubbing Brett Hull, of course. He goes to the U.S.
Yeah, that came back to bite him in 96 at the World Cup.
Marty St. Louis this year is pretty bad, though.
But the reverse snubs bother me more.
Yeah,
not to stand up and wear your country's jersey.
Right. Yeah, if you're asked to play for your country, most guys will do it. But if you don't do it, it leaves you scratching your head.
Thursday night's Capitals Lightning game in Tampa Bay was marred by poor ice conditions, so much so that the two teams had to change ends at the 10-minute mark of each period.
The Winter Classic.
No. Yeah. The Winter Classic, they only changed ends
in the third period and
overtime.
Yeah.
This was every period they changed ends at the 10-minute mark.
You never see that.
You never
what
see
do you
that.
Mean? Why?
Because the
problem... Why did you do it once? That'd be 30-30.
I agree with you, but for whatever reason... Because they were improving the ice as the game went along. Every time there was a TV timeout, they came out to do a little bit more work to improve the lousy ice conditions in Tampa Bay. The question I have for you guys is, do you think lousy ice conditions are having a detrimental effect on the quality of NHL games?
No. Lousy questions are having a detrimental effect on rapid fire.
But I mean, as far as the ice conditions go, every team has a head ice technician and then your group who monitors the ice. And for the most part, you know, the ice in the NHL is pretty good. And in some arenas, Richie, it's not as good.
The MSG.
And the busy arenas. But, you know, Canadian arenas definitely have probably better ice. The Western Canadian, I know Dan Craig and Edmonton and all that. But I don't think this is a major problem. You don't hear about this very often. This is obviously something... I would say that's a little bit isolated, but again, I don't know enough about...
Isolated. Nice pun.
I don't know, but you know what I mean? I don't know enough about arenas and their ice conditions to really know which team has, you know, as far as I'm concerned, there haven't been a lot of these problems, so I can't say, you know, sweet blanket statement that there's a problem here.
They're just used to it now. I mean, if any more questions like that, the rapid fire is going to turn into slow burn.
40-year-old former NHL defenseman Brian Rafalski has agreed to a contract with the Florida Everglades of the ECHL.
Yep.
Rafalski apparently felt so good after playing in the Winter Classic alumni game that he wanted to explore his options again in professional hockey.
So he should skate every week with 55-year-olds.
Do you think an NHL team will take a flyer on Brian Rafalski and that you'll see him back in the NHL?
Yeah. Well, let's be honest here, guys. If he wants to play, how many offensively talented right-handed shooting defensemen are available without any compensation aside from money? Somebody would sign him. 100%.
Yeah, and apparently Kenny Holland had to release him so he could go play for Florida in the ECHL, so it looks like he's probably not going to play with the Red Wings, I imagine. But
well,
yeah,
well,
Richie, you're right. I mean,
how many right-handed offensive defensemen do they have? None.
You have to see how he does in the ECHL and then maybe see him go to the next level, then make that determination. But the guy hasn't
hasn't
played in 2.5 years, right? I'm not saying that you didn't assume that,
yeah.
but you got to see how he does here. I mean, obviously, you know, he said that, you know, he has to do this. It's something that in his heart, and he,
so many bad defensemen out there, he would get, if he wants to play and can prove that he can somewhat play, he will get a contract.
Maybe Chevy's going to give him a call.
No. Just don't need any more right-handed offensive
defensemen. I was going to say offensive right-handed defensemen.
You can never have enough, guys. Just like pierogi pizza, you can never have enough.
Can he play forward, though? Maybe he'll play for the Jets as a right winger. Worth noting, when Rafalski retired, it was sort of a surprise.
Yeah, he was 36, right?
Yeah, he was still young enough that everyone expected to, you know, he'd have another contract.
Well, when
under
Drew retired at 74, we were thinking he'd probably work till he was 80, but that was a little
Drew actually snubbed CPP. That was his last snub.
I was surprised you guys missed out on the obvious age joke with the 72 Summit Series snubbing Bobby Hall.
Yeah.
You would have said, Drew, that's something you would have remembered.
Well, don't worry, we got one in before
the teenager show. Back then.
Yeah, exactly. It was, you know. Earlier this week, the parent company of the Philadelphia 76ers and the New Jersey Devils announced a multi-year sponsorship agreement with a poker website. It's the first sponsorship agreement between major U.S.-based professional teams and an online gambling company. Do you have any worries about an NHL team being affiliated with a gambling website? Or do you think North American sports are too cautious about the perceived influence gambling may have over them?
CFL looks like it was ahead of the curve, right? Wasn't CFL into this a while ago?
I think Bodog has been a sponsor of the CFL for years.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to move to Vegas, they can't care too much about it. And apparently that arena was
approved
for Clark County. I read that. I haven't read enough about it. But the point is, eventually it appears, if you read, you know, people who talk to Gary, who know Gary Bettman, he will want to be the first person in. First pro sports league in Vegas, and online gambling is very present now, so I'm not shocked to see these, you know, this is the Devils Flyers, right? So the owners, so I mean, I'm not surprised.
They have the same ownership.
Sorry, Devils
Devils
Sixers.
76ers have the same ownership.
I'm not
ownership.
Surprised to see them venturing closer to that realm.
I don't have any problem, and I don't think that I'm worried about, you know, the influence of gambling on, you know, as far as sponsor goes. The reality is, guys, I'm not a big gambler. You know, I like to play the nickel slots when I go to the casino. But it, you know, as far as, you know, this influence, I mean, there's just gambling is a huge industry. You go to Vegas and especially NFL, but gambling is also huge in hockey. It's already there. It's kind of subjective, right? So I don't think this is really a huge negative.
Gambling's a bigger risk. You know, it's a big. You look at sports, okay? Basketball, of course, you can five players on the court. You can have more of an effect. You know, at the same, basically five players for most of the game. Baseball, yeah, starting pitchers, hockey, goalies, football, quarterbacks. But the team sports, like a little bit less than basketball. It's hard to affect a game when you're a fourth defenseman throwing the game. I mean, I don't know. But yeah, it's always a concern. It will always be a concern, Drew, because it will probably always be happening at some level of some sport. Like soccer has that epidemic with it.
Sure.
So. Yeah, I know it's tricky territory, but you know, money is money, as they say, right? And people don't really seem to care.
Before we get to cheers and jeers, predictions on tonight's score from both of you gentlemen for the Jets and the Blue Jackets.
We usually don't do that, but I guess we're doing predictions.
Yeah, ready, eh?
I think the Jets, you know, they're coming in having lost four games in a row. Blue Jackets are coming into a situation where they played last night. I'm going to say the Jets win, and I'm going to say the score is 4-2.
Ooh, I have to agree with Ezzy. I think that'll actually be the score as well. I think the Jets, the losing, I think, is they're fed up with. I think Claude Noel's kind of taken a tone of, okay, you know, I'm just going to go. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. We'll see what happens at this point. I think he's going to be a little more himself, which I like. I think the moves and the way they've played lately, I do think they win. I think they take advantage of Columbus's aggressiveness with their defensemen at the blue line a bit. And in fact, they played last night 4-2.
Let's wrap the show with cheers and jeers.
Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock, cheers and jeers to end.
You know, Drew, I want to give my cheer this week to Daryl Sutter. He got watched the LA Kings-Boston Bruins game, and he was honored for coaching his 1,000th game in the National Hockey League. And the way we talk about coaches on this show and the media in general, I know we defended coaches recently for the most part, but to coach 1,000 games at the National Hockey League level is an impressive feat, and to do it as well as he has with the Stanley Cup is pretty great. And if you saw him and his son and his wife accept that honor, he doesn't like the spotlight, but I thought that was really, if you saw the smile on his face with having the son out there, you would have, you couldn't help but feel happy for him. So he gets my cheer.
Ezzy,
great coach. My cheer is going to go to Ryan Reeves, just signed a 4-year contract with the St. Louis Blues. He's an enforcer, you know, a guy, for him, a player who sticks up for his teammates, a 4-year deal is a big deal for him, and he's going to stick around with a really good Blues team, so it's good for him, and mainly because he is the voice in one of the best commercials on TSN 1290 radio with Rick Ralph for Virtuti Mortgage, where he pronounces Virtuti gratuity and the best
line
of all time.
That's Jim Slater who does that. It's Jim Slater who pronounces Virtuti.
No, he's on Virtuti.
I know, they're both on.
That's true.
Slater who pronounces. Yeah.
So I screwed that up.
Yeah, you're great. You know what? And you make fun of me. I'll wrap up cheers and jeers by cheering the NHL. It became the first league in the big four, big five sports to have every single team supporting a LGBT cause. The Colorado Avalanche came on board with team captain Gabriel Landeskog. So I will cheer the NHL for being really at the driving force and the spearheading of the LGBT movement and the You Can Play team.
Andrew, I think we all cheer that as well.
That's
a group cheer.
That's a group cheer.
Yep.
That's it for this Saturday afternoon in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. Big thank you to Frank Provenzano of ESPN.com. A big thank you to Tyson Nash from Fox Sports Arizona, and a big thank you to Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Wednesday night, NHL midweek, 6 p.m. on TSN 1290. For producer Tim and producer Chris, for Michael Remus and Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, for my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Thanks very much for listening. Hustler and Lawless is next. And if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.